fumble through this introduction and then roll. How's everybody doing? All right, if you don't have your chips open yet, go ahead and do that now, and we can edit that out. It's my my honor, my privilege to introduce our speaker for October, Trey Richards. He and his wife, Catherine, are here. They have a 9-year-old daughter named Savannah and a 7-year-old son, Caleb. They're at Covenant Christian School right now, actually, right? Hopefully without masks. I don't know. I'm not going to make a political statement. Trey moved here from Florida, and I said earlier that his daughter's name is Savannah. And I said, hey, did you happen to listen to Jimmy Buffett come up with that name? He said, how did you know that? So we have that in common, that we're both parrot heads. And if I had a daughter, I would have named her Savannah. So come on up here. Let's talk about fatherhood, and let's give a warm round of applause for Trey Richards. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, good afternoon, and thanks for being here today. I have enjoyed being a part of this group for a while now and listening to so many amazing testimonies. It's greatly encouraged me to hear stories of covenantal generational blessing and family heritage. My story is unfortunately much more difficult and heartbreaking. However, it's also incredibly redemptive how God is in the midst of breaking generational curses and renewing not only my heart, but the hearts of my children. I was raised in a non-Christian household, and to put it in perspective, when I was 11, I had moved 11 times through 3 states and was on my second stepfather and third father figure in my life. My parents split when I was around 2 and divorced when I was 6. Once I did turn 11, we did gain some stability in where we lived as we moved to Orlando, Florida, where we lived through college. I loved Orlando and will always consider it my hometown. My father was a kind, caring man who was a gifted athlete, having a full ride through college to play tennis. I adored my father and chose every opportunity that I had in order to spend time with him. He was a lot of fun to be around when sober and was pitiful and ridiculous when drunk. He had a huge heart, and if he did anything right, he freely and openly shared his love for me. I was his beloved boy, the one he always wanted. Of course, he very much loved my sisters, but I always knew as his boy, for me, his love was next level. He succumbed to his own pain and insecurity and became an alcoholic to the point where he couldn't hold down a job and function through life. Even though I loved my father dearly, I never had respect for him as a son should have for his father. I always felt as if he was too much of an insecure boy himself, having never grown up to emotional maturity. I was very much aware of this even at a young age. He would often be so staggeringly drunk that he would pass out. I recall one evening where I was alone with him and he came up to say goodnight in severely slurred words. He then spent what seemed like 20 minutes trying to navigate down the stairs, then quickly passed out in his bed. I was honestly terrified that he was so intoxicated that he wouldn't survive the night. I was around 10 years old when this happened. I'll never forget the terror that I felt and how out of control I felt that particular night. Alcoholism ultimately cost my father his life when I was 13 years old. Clearly, this was devastating to lose my father in this way. Has left a massive hole in my heart and in my life that I never quite imagined would ever fill back in. It has honestly taken a lot of therapy and even some intensive therapy through on-site in Nashville and the Allender Center in Seattle specifically. Certainly the sadness of this experience will never leave. However, this event no longer defines who I am as a man or as a father. As fond as I was to my father, my story is no longer inextricably linked to his life path. God has me on a very different path, and for that, I'm exceedingly grateful. My mother, throughout the years, remarried a few times, with each stepfather serving as an example of what not to be, rather than what a father should be. These men were fortunately never physically abusive, but were very cold, distant, and unloving. The most profound influence was George, who I lived with from age 11 through college, and then my mom and he finally divorced. They created a household with enough tension that you could cut it with a knife. Looking back, this household seems like such a spiritually dark place. Given my age at the time, I naturally looked to my stepfather, George, to show me what is a man. How does a man act in marriage, business, relationships, etc.? All I was shown is to never show emotion, be cold and calculating, be steely and competitive, never trust anyone, and bury your intense anger and every other emotion deep. Those who know me best know this is fortunately the antithesis of everything that I am and represent in all areas of life. I can honestly say that being a teenager, I naturally looked to the father figure in my midst. I'm also happy to say that I didn't take any life lessons with me from my stepfather and dismissed far more than I learned. Two other men of note in my life were my two grandfathers. Both were stereotypical World War II generation men of honor. Both were intensely loyal, hardworking, honorable, and faithful men whom I love very much. They have always been guiding lights of stability during a time of tremendous turmoil. They were both providentially called home when I was 10 and 18, respectively. As a result, by 18, any healthy role model in my life had all vanished. Heading into being on my own at college and beyond, as you might imagine, this left a tremendous amount of insecurity heading into such a pivotal time of my life without the security of an older male role model to emulate and to speak truth into my life. My mother lacked the ability to create a stable household herself, having a covert narcissistic personality disorder, likely combined with histrionic personality disorder, the latter being someone who will cause a scene if they have to in order to ensure that the attention is always and completely on them. As most boys who grow up without a true father figure, I was overly close with my mother growing up, believing she to be the stable and consistent parent who was always there. I simply lacked fatherly guidance and clung to the parent I deemed secure. The reality is that neither of my parents were safe places or able to create that sense of security in home. As you might imagine, having a deceased father and a relationship with a mother who made everything about her had me always looking for a family where I could feel at home. I tried to spend as much time at friends' houses in an attempt to have some degree of normalcy and to observe what I perceived to be healthy relationships and fatherhood in particular. Looking back, out of all the friends and girlfriends that I had, not a single one of them had divorced parents. It was as if I was drawn to those who I perceived as being emotionally stable and those who had a safe and loving home to go back to. I enjoyed being at other friends' homes as a means of learning what true and healthy family and fatherhood was all about. I'm also grateful for those families who so openly embraced me, supported me, and loved me. Upon graduating high school, I went to the University of Florida and am, of course, a proud Gator. While home for the summer, I was introduced to a girl who was a believer. I started attending a solid church in Maitland, Florida, in the Orlando area, called Orangewood Presbyterian, with her and her family. And from the preaching I heard there that summer, I became a believer. Once I returned to UF, I got involved with a Christian ministry called Gator Christian Life, where I was fed as a young believer. I was truly excited about my faith, yet firmly trapped in a performance wheel trying to be good enough. I was desperately trying to fake it until I made it in the spiritual realm. In spite of this challenge of understanding holiness before God is through faith and not performance that candidly is ongoing, there's no doubt that a true heart change occurred where I knew my faith was authentic and my perception of the world was shifting. A few years after graduation, I moved to Dallas in March of 2000. My wife, Catherine, and I met in a singles group at Park City's Presbyterian around 2003. We spent time together within a larger group of friends and eventually escalated the relationship and married in March of 2005. After a year or so of marriage, we decided to attempt to start a family. We ended up enduring 6 years of infertility. During this time, mostly driven from my upbringing and what a mess my parents were, I was absolutely terrified to become a father. I simply didn't have a roadmap for it and knew that if or when I had kids, that I wanted to give them a far better upbringing than what I was given. As a result of this fear, I was kind of content not having kids, traveling the world and living what I perceived the safe, comfortable dink life. However, I knew that if we didn't give our all to have a family, I felt that I would lose Catherine. Not lose her in a physical way, but emotionally, I was afraid that I would lose her. As a result, after having spent a lot of money on fertility treatments, we finally elected to do in vitro. I was so confident this was going to work, it was truly a supernatural piece. That is how Savannah was conceived, our precious 9-year-old daughter. A short 8 months later, our son Caleb was conceived, not through in vitro, but to our shock, this occurred naturally, something we never thought was remotely possible. The only problem is that we still had 3 frozen embryos that we knew morally that we needed to give a chance at life. So there I was, a father who's absolutely terrified to be a father, with 2 small babies at home, with 3 in the freezer. At this point, I just became numb and didn't feel much of anything. I feel as if I literally missed out on the first year of my son's life. Any parent will tell you that with 2 young children at home, the second one rarely makes the photo bank, let alone the memory bank. However, I was so emotionally checked out during this time that my value to the family was minimal. I was heading down a road where inevitably I was going to repeat much of the same generational curses and mistakes that my parents made. A turning point occurred when my son was around 15 months old. I was at my mom's house where she had a photo collage of me when I was a boy. The pictures were dead ringers of my son Caleb and mirrored him exactly. It may as well have been him in those pictures. That was a profound aha turning point moment where I immediately fell completely in love with my son. I went from looking at him as a burden that came out of nowhere to my precious boy that I will love and protect each day of his life. It was truly this transcendent moment where I started to feel intense mercy for the child in those pictures. And through this experience, I was able to feel intense love and compassion on my own son, as someone who will have my affection and protection all the days of our lives. In early 2016, my wife and I became involved with a marriage ministry called Reengaged. This served as a major catalyst in helping me to realize how badly I needed to unpack my grief from my childhood filled with trauma and deal with the root causes of why the pressures of reaching mid-40s combined with career, house, being a husband and father was too much for me that I checked out on life. I'd become a hollowed out version of myself that was of little value to Catherine or my children. It was then that I finally got up the courage to call a counselor, booked a few intensive retreats in Nashville and Seattle respectively. I began the process of finally unpacking my woundedness with my wife and children serving as my primary motivators to process my trauma and to be as emotionally healthy and present as possible, to be the best version of myself and to be the best husband and father that I can possibly be. So many doors have opened for me on an emotional level over the past few years. My current work continues as there are many layers to trauma and mother and father wounds are multifaceted. Even though the work is hard, it is so worth the journey and renewal. Recently, I informed my counselor that it has become a desire for me to write my story in the form of what I hope to be a publishable book centered around growing up without the positive influence of a father. I believe it has the ability to benefit many men in particular who grew up in fatherless homes and feel stuck in isolation and loneliness. I want to speak truth into the less than, directionless, and purposelessness that I know that they feel, as these emotions intensely resonate with my own story. Even if this book is never published, the therapeutic benefit of writing it, along with my strong desire for my own children to intensely know who their father is, will make the entire writing process more than worth it. I'm currently about 150 pages in and have a lot more work to do. It's become a passion project that I fit time in wherever I can. Practically speaking, I try and never miss an opportunity to become engaged in the lives of my children. I make an effort to be at every event, to be their biggest cheerleader, to routinely say that I love you and I'm proud of you, to frequently give them a warm, inviting embrace that screams, you are loved, safe, and you are enough. I most recently was a coach on my son's baseball team. I had a lot of fun with that, but it was also hard for me as I never had the opportunity to play Little League. I never had a father figure teach me about fielding and batting. As a result, I was out there fighting through my own insecurities to engage and encourage the boys to bring their best. I recall being the third base coach, second guessing myself as to whether I should hold at second or call them to third, hold them at third, or send them home. Inside of me, there's an insecure young boy that would have loved to have an older man take me under his wing, coach me, and love me not just in baseball, but in life. That's a significant wound that I know will continue to take time to fully process and heal. I know that stepping in with my whole self to the best of my ability in this present time is the most opportune thing I can do in order to love my son and the rest of his teammates well. I'm happy to report that the Covenant Knights, my son's baseball team, won their division this year. On the weekend of the playoffs, they played back-to-back games in 100-degree heat, yet they won them both. It was a blast not only for the boys, but all the dads who were out there coaching as well. As for my daughter, she's passionate about dancing, and it's common to have a dance party as we were doing the dishes after dinner. Twirling her around and seeing her smile is a profound gift that I've cherished. Seeing her perform on stage in her ballet recitals causes me to beam with pride as she lights up on stage as if she were born to live there. We most recently went on a date together to eat sushi, then to see the Dallas Ballet perform Cinderella. It was clearly not what I've chosen from an activity standpoint, but it was me entering into her world to the best of my ability, to listen to her, to make her feel safe, and most importantly, intensely loved. If I were to give any advice to new fathers, it would be to process and fully deal with their trauma. We all have trauma to varying degrees. Every parent parents according to what their own needs were as a child. As an example, in my upbringing, discipline was often severe and not grounded in love. I also never felt fully seen and understood. However, we had very little time of play within our family. There simply was just too much dysfunction. As a result, I'm really good at and thoroughly enjoy playing with my kids. However, when sibling rivalry is roaring and my kids are acting like deranged chimpanzees towards each other, which they occasionally do, I'm overly quick to passively sit in the background while my wife manages the situation. That overt passiveness with discipline is something I'm actively working on so that my kids experience healthy discipline, not just from one parent, but from both of us. I also don't want my wife to feel unsupported with the more challenging aspects of parenthood. My passivity and the harder aspects of parenting are driven from such a profound desire to not break my children. I don't want to hurt them in the ways that I've been hurt. I know that I never wanted discipline and anger and do or say something that causes long-term damage. My counselor has reminded me on many occasions that no parent is perfect and everyone inevitably causes some degree of emotional wounds in their children. However, the wounds look different from what the parent experiences. They are working so hard to compensate the other direction. It's simultaneously horrifying and comforting. Let me finish by sharing a story that occurred a few months back. I've yet to get through it without crying, but will do my best. It was an evening when Caleb and I had a baseball game and Mom and Savannah had a book club meeting. And a game is never enough for Caleb, as he has so much innate intensity and grit that he wanted to work on his catching after the game. So we spent a while tossing the ball in the yard and eventually went in and hit the showers. It was a summer evening. We didn't have school, so I gave him the option of having an extended time to read before bed, or he and I could watch a show, and then he can have a shorter reading time before bed. Of course, he chose the show option. He and I got settled on the couch with him lying down with a pillow and a blanket, and me sitting about a cushion. me sitting about a cushion away. I asked him, "Are you good, buddy?" His reply will never leave me. He said, "It'd be better if you'd come a little closer and we could snuggle." Naturally, with a completely full heart, I joyfully obliged. This story to me is so much bigger than a single sweet event on an isolated evening. This to me is a picture of brokenness being redeemed. It's a picture of grace, love and redemption personified. The fact that my sweet son felt comfortable voicing something so potentially risky and vulnerable in my presence, knowing that it was safe to do so, meant the world to me. In spite of the brokenness of my past and my own current brokenness, God is in the midst of breaking generational curses and renewing and redeeming my heart as a father and the hearts of my own children. And for that, I'm exceedingly grateful. Thanks, God.
Thank you so much for sharing. Take a couple questions?
Sure.
Okay. Well, I sometimes think about how all of us in here had models of a father. Good or bad, we had some that was modeled for us. And in our worst times, we tend to revert to what was modeled to us. In hard times, do you find yourself doing that with your kids sometimes when high stress situation? And what do you do to mitigate that a little bit? Because you probably didn't have the greatest models, obviously, is what you said in your speech. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, and when I'm triggered, when I'm not at my best, I tend to disengage and be passive. And that's, you know, something that I'm actively working on is it makes my poor wife, you know, Catherine, have to deal kind of as a single parent in times when things are kind of difficult. Kids are a little out of line. It's getting better, but their sibling rivalry can be a bit intense at times. And so it's more of a, you know, you're triggered, life is intense, work's really busy, you know, don't blow up, don't explode, don't wound with your words. And that's such a driving force to me to not wound with my words that inevitably I draw back and become passive. And I know that's not the answer. Perhaps it's arguably healthier than blowing up, but I want to be able to enter in and enter in with grace, with firmness, but with love and grace, and not be so checked out.
Thank you. Anybody else have some questions? We got one over here. Brian.
Yeah, that's a great question. And they say anger is a secondary emotion, that underneath it is a lot of hurt. So, you know, for me, as I learned to shelve anger for so many years, that it was buried so deep that I couldn't access it. So, yeah, it is through counseling and through dealing with the underlying hurt issues that has helped me to access anger. You know, and it's, anger's tough. It's complicated as a Christian because, you know, we know anger is a natural emotion, but anger's not pretty. It's not churchy, you know, if you know what I mean by that. But we have to have outlets. We have to have space where we can share it within the confines of relationship with others. And, you know, if we need to go get a bat and bang on a tree, I mean, whatever. You got to let it. Got to let it out. I've done that too.
Anybody else? Question? Come on. Here we go, David.
Trey, what have you done as far as pursuing an older gentleman to be a mentor or speak
Not a whole lot. I want it to happen naturally and organically. Not that my life has been completely void of it. There are examples of it, but I think anyone in any phase desires help from someone a little further along. So that's a desire, but I've certainly had it along the way that's, you know, are markers of you know, of grace and encouragement as well.
Any more questions? Oh, he's right here. He's going to leave, and then you won't be able to ask that question. There we go.
Quite a bit. And there's a phrase that I've recently learned called, it's a psychological term called gray rocking, where it's essentially you're not blacking out the relationship, in other words, completely cutting it off. But there's gray where you're in relationship, but you don't tell them a whole lot. You don't, there's no vulnerability. It's just very surfacey, matter of fact. And I've learned that that's necessary. Otherwise, you run the risk of revealing too much and that being manipulated or shared with other family members in a way that, you know, could come back and with attempts to manipulate as well. So I've just learned with narcissistic personality disorder, that's unfortunately the reality of how you have to kind of manage someone with that disability. They are great people. Thanks for being here. All right, sounds good. I would love that. And to that point, my sweet wife, thanks. It's been 17 years. You know, it hasn't been perfect. We've had our bumps, as everyone has, but she's been incredibly encouraging. You know, and coming from my background, you wonder, am I capable of being married? And if I'm capable of being married, am I capable of creating any kind of stability in my marriage? And obviously having a wife who's just easy to be with, and faithful and loving, it's been made that more than possible. Absolutely. I mean, whenever our family of four is together, I just glow as long as the kids aren't acting up. And then I get irritated and want to escape. But most of the time, I just glow. I'm so joyful for it. It's so sweet. Did you take the Bible college curriculum? I did. You were my teacher. It's been a few years, though.
Sharing something, I mean, was it beneficial to you? Was it there?
you know, it was, absolutely. I mean, just to have the, you know, the basics of being present, you know, as you say, be the dad, just being present and showing up is half the battle. So it's just in its simple profoundness, incredibly encouraging.
Okay, going once. Okay, great. All right. Trey, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, we have a gift. I see a hat in your future. So when you do go pick up a new hobby of fly fishing, you'd wear that hat. Keep the sun out of your eyes.
Yeah. Since you're wearing blue, I'm not even going to ask you, do you want a gray hat or a blue hat?
This is great.
Blue, awesome. And a journal and a cup to remind you.
Okay, so if you want some of this stuff, come talk to me. We got speaking spots available in the spring, and we can hook you up with a hat. And thank you very much. Let's give Trey one more round of applause. I want to close by reminding, or maybe telling some of you guys for the first time, that we have our Legacy Luncheon coming up November the 12th at the Hope Center. And if you're not coming, then you need to come. You need to come learn more about the ministry, see what we're doing around the world, not just in Dallas at Father's Forums, but also in the prison ministries. And then, like Bill said, Rwanda is now turning into the whole continent of Africa. And what Rafi's doing, starting with Cuba, is now throughout Latin America. And it's not what these guys are doing. It's what God is doing through just taking what some of us in this room probably had great dads and look at this curriculum and go, well, yeah, I kind of get it. And there's other people, like when I went to Cuba, who had two generations of dads removed from learning how to be a dad because the Communist Party just came and said, no, we'll take care of everything. And it was just mind-blowing to me to see that these 10 chapters in this book translated into Spanish, and guys were weeping, reading, wow, this is how God's calling me to be a father. And there's a need for this all over the world. So come to the Hope Center on November 12th and learn more. And then find out how to get involved.